Are you still dealing with the aftermath of last week's storms? Do you have big trees damaged or uprooted? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our gardening show, we have an arborist here to offer tips for assessing the damage and how to minimize risks during severe weather. We'll also talk about late summer harvesting and fall planting and take your questions for the full hour. Joining me now are Madison Tree Care and Landscaping CEO, John Butcher. Welcome back, John.
Hi, Lucy.
No, it's a busy time for you. Appreciate your being here.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Civic Garden Center Director of Education, Mary Dudley. Thanks for being here, Mary.
Thank you.
And Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent, Sarah Imbus. Welcome back, Sarah.
So good to be here.
Great to have you all. They are ready for your questions. They were already talking a bunch before we went live, so they are ready. Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. John, I saw so many photos of these just uprooted trees after last week's storms passed through. What caused all that?
Well, certainly high winds are the leading factor that tipped the scales, if you will, but saturated soils really feed into tipping over at the base. In the summer, we have full leaf expansion. There's a lot of extra wind sail from the leaves. And also, I don't think a lot of people think of this, but the wood is actually a lot heavier because the sap and all the water and nutrients are running through the tree now. And so a log that might weigh 100 pounds in the winter could be 120 pounds now. So you just have all of this extra weight that's associated with the tree. And they get really heavy and the soil gives away and the wind blows just the right way and trees on a house.
Mm. So how should people even begin to assess the damage? Can a partially uprooted tree ever be saved?
Yes. certainly there are ways to do that. But I think when you have a really large tree that's partially uprooted, unfortunately, the most common outcome is removal. Mm-hmm. There's just no real way to safely anchor that back in with regular tools. And would I say impossible? No, but the engineering and cost to do that and to still have a fairly elevated risk level, there's not very many people that are going to want to spring for that.
Yeah. What about a tree that's lost some just really big branches that it hasn't been uprooted, but has some, you know, the storms have just destroyed some of its big branches?
So each scenario is different, but one of the things that can be really destructive is when we have breaks on the main stem, because that trees have a really hard time compartmentalizing over those wounds. They don't heal. So the way a tree responds is it puts new growth on to grow around those wounds. And when you have a main stem break, trees just don't have a great mechanism to grow around that. And so you end up with a pretty significant wound there long term. Doesn't always mean the tree has to come out, doesn't always mean it has to come out right away, but it is a deficiency that often is going to take a lot of extra maintenance and usually shortens the overall life of the tree, even with maintenance.
If it changes the tree's, this is the wrong word, I'm sure, but like geometry or balance in its branches and leaf canopy and all that, does that make it more susceptible to damage later if it's all kind of off balance?
Absolutely. There's the off balance part. And after that wound happens, decay will start to set into the wound. And so it gets weaker over time. And the way to compensate for that is to do pruning on the remaining branches. And oftentimes it's a lot more of an aggressive prune than what you would do in a normal tree care maintenance scenario.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the other things that make a tree more susceptible to damage? You talked about these winds and the saturated soil and just how all those factors, you know, the heaviness, but are there other things that play into that?
Absolutely. There's a thing that we call included bark. And if you can imagine where a single tree trunk splits into two or multiple tree trunks, those are really, really weak spots. And what happens is those secondary trunks or the multiple leader sections, once they get above the main trunk, keep growing in diameter. And as they grow in diameter, they push against each other rather than grow together. And as they push against each other, they start to create a weakness there. And as the tree grows taller and gets heavier, it also applies more pressure to that weak spot. And so we see a lot of failures along those lines. Most trees are capable of having codominant leaders in that scenario, but some trees are particularly notorious for it. The old Bradford pear is one that, you know, everybody's seen a Bradford pear laying in their yard. Black locusts are another one that are really susceptible to that. And another thing that happens, I don't want to say happens, but all tree species are not created equal either. And some tree species have a profile to fail more than others. And black locust profile would be to fail at these codominant leaders or at a weak spot in the middle of a tree, where something like a hackberry is much more prone to uprooting at the base. And it's amazing how many hackberries blow over and there's almost no root ball at all at the base of the tree.
Hmm. Mary, I'm not going to ask you to tell all your secrets, but didn't you have a locust that had some problems during the storm? Were you saying that before the show?
So I was actually removing some black locusts in my backyard because they were shading out some of my orchard trees.
Oh, and
okay. I was shocked about the density of the wood because it grows very, very quickly. And so I was kind of assuming that it was a little bit more like honeysuckle. I was just going to be able to breeze through these with a couple of my regular tools. And it was a labor to get these trees down. They were only about 17 feet tall or so. So we were able to do that. But it just really goes to show that they're not all created the same. And looking up that research, I was like, oh my goodness, these trees are made for building boats. Like very
good firewood.
Dense. Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah, very good firewood.
Good fence poles.
Yes.
They're great for actually raised beds too, to support the gardening industry.
Oh,
here.
Oh. Yeah. And I hate to say a silver lining, but if gardeners are out there and you see a tree company around in your neighborhood, I did flag one down and I got a full 5 yards of mulch put into my backyard so that I could put it around all of my garden beds. So, I mean, there always is a little bit of a silver lining,
oh,
I suppose.
Yeah, because they're crunching up those trees, I guess, making mulch out of them.
You got to take the positive out of anything in life.
Yeah. Yeah. So, John, what about an unhealthy tree? I mean, can a tree with, like, disease, you were talking about rot that comes from damage, but can a diseased tree be more susceptible to severe damage during big weather events like that?
I guess it depends on the disease, but a lot of times the trees that are not growing as well and are thinner but are still alive are a little less prone to fail in the storms because they don't have as much wind resistance with the leaves. They don't have as much new growth that's coming on because they're not growing as fast. They don't have as much water weight in the tree because they're struggling to get nutrients throughout the tree. I think always when people see a spruce that's like really sparse and it's in their yard, but it's all alive, but it's just really sparse. And they're really worried about that one falling over in a windstorm. And I'm like, no, that's the one that's not going to fall over in the windstorm. It's the one that's really full and healthy as can be that's going to be more susceptible to wind.
Huh. Okay. Well, we have a caller on the line. Hi, Mary Jane. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you. I wanted to know how English ivy kills trees. What are the mechanisms? There is this magnificent big hackberry tree in the backyard behind the backyard next to mine. And on the evening of July 4th, part of it fell into the backyard next to me. It missed the house. And then a few weeks later, another section of it fell into the backyard. Yard next door to it. The main tree is still there, and it's a very big tree, and it's covered in English ivy. And I don't know the people. I want to know what to tell them about how they should deal with that.
Hmm. Great question.
Well, I think they should definitely seek an arborist advice here. Having those big sections break out, likely there'll be large wounds on the trunk that could lead to more failures. I'm not sure if the whole tree will need to be removed or not without looking at it. But ivy itself is not parasitic to the tree, so it's getting all of its nutrients from the soil. But what it does is it adds extra weight on the branches. It hides potential weak spots that you can't see. And then it also starts to take away from sunlight that the trees would get. And the ivy grows at a faster rate than what most trees grow, so eventually it overtakes it. And I would recommend at a minimum, and I think this is what most regular people would do, but you want to cut a big chunk out of the ivy without cutting into the trunk of the tree. So you got to be really careful. It's a little bit of a surgical procedure. And you want to make a circle all the way around the tree through all the ivy, because if you leave one little spot open, it'll fuse back together and then it takes back off again. And it's they're not good for the trees.
Right. Well, do the roots of the ivy have any effect on the tree roots?
So there's competition for sure, but there's competition from grass. There's competition, you know, if you look in a wood scenario, there's all kinds of competition and things growing together. And I think there's enough room for the root systems to be both growing there. It's the fact that it's has all the other detrimental effects on the above ground portions that I would really be concerned.
Yeah, I've seen where it'll grow up behind the outer layer of bark on a tree.
Yeah. Well, Mary Jane, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling today. It was great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Oops, hung up a little too early. I have fought ivy myself, and it is no fun to try to get rid of that, whether it's going up a tree or going up your house or whatever. That's kind of a nightmare. So, John, we've talked about all these things that can contribute to damage to trees. What can we do to minimize the risk to our trees during storms? Because last week's storm was not the last one we're ever going to get.
Right. Well, I think it's not like the day before the storm that you're thinking about this. This is changing your oil in your car, the preventive maintenance, and pruning your trees to lighten the tips. And every tree doesn't need this, but when trees get old and heavy and they're in a park-like setting where they've got endless room to grow, which is most residential yards, they just keep growing out and growing out and growing out, and eventually they just get too heavy. What we don't want to do, and this is an absolute no, is go and thin out all the branches on the inside of the tree, because that creates an effect called lion's tailing, where all the weight is way out on the tips. And when you get wind in those scenarios, the branches just whip around and they don't stop whipping around and they're much more likely to fail. So we want to support those inner branches, but we actually want to prune from the tips out and making a bunch of smaller diameter cuts on the tips to relieve the weight from the end so that the trees can compartmentalize over those wounds quicker. And if you do that over the entire tree, you actually keep individual branch failure at a lower rate of failure, and you also support the main stem becomes stronger because it's under less pressure too.
Do we just need to pay more attention to our trees? I mean, is that, Sarah, you're nodding your head in agreement, because I feel like I don't have big trees where I live now, but I did in my old house, and I just kind of had faith that they would grow and be happy and nature would take care of it. But I should have been doing more pruning and all that kind of stuff. Do you think people just don't pay enough attention to their trees, Sarah?
Well, maybe not only that, but maybe taking for granted, right, that, oh, they're big and old and they'll be fine. I also think a thing that we need to be more aware of is plant selection. So I love oaks, but I know my yard cannot handle an oak. There's an oak in various spaces in my community, and I know that it's doing its work and its magic in our community. So, and that's okay for me in our environment, right? I just have to be mindful, and not every yard can handle a white oak. Like, we just can't do that.
And why is that? Because they just get too big?
Maybe the space isn't large enough, and the roots, and we have to think about the root structure. I think of just construction when you were talking about just overall like health of a plant, right? It's also not only above the soil line, but what's going on below the soil line. And roots are just, they're magical, but they just go as far as they can. And if there's any damage from a sidewalk to new construction to pipes to this and that, I mean, they're damaged. There are arborists that can come out and do certain techniques, adding more oxygen into the soil to help reduce compaction and various other techniques. But that's only, you know, a tool and a part of helping it out, root pruning and various other things. But plant selection is huge. So maybe your yard can't, and reading the labels and talking to someone who's knowledgeable at a local nursery, you know, there's a difference between 80 feet to maybe you should just go with like a service berry, you know, that might be get 25 feet, right? So there's a huge difference. Another plant selection, I don't see this as much, but planting river birches right next to your foundation. And white pines. White pines were huge giveaways at some of these Arbor Day and Earth Day events. And those are not the best plant to put. They're very weak wooded. And those are one of the ones the white pines can decline very easily in windstorms. I was in Louisville when the ice storm happened, and that was pretty awful to see those lovely large trees go. But it's all about plant selection. You can plant those in your community, or if you're like, I need one of these, maybe plant it at a local park or, you know, donate it somewhere. So, yeah. I hope that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about what John just said and, you know, how you should not thin out the inside. But when the utility folks come down, mm-hmm. that's exactly what they're doing. They're cutting a big hole in the middle of these trees that were planted under power lines, mm-hmm. probably not in the right place, or they grew up on their own. But now you're telling me that that weakens the tree's ability to withstand these storms because then they're very side and tip heavy.
Yeah, I would just like to say, we do not have Duke here to defend its tree term.
It's true. Maybe they're just doing what they can. So, yeah, right. but I'm interested with what you said earlier.
Are you suggesting that what the power line pruning does to the trees aren't good for them?
It may be wrong plant, wrong place. Yeah.
Certainly, it would be great if our infrastructure was set up differently and the trees could be more harmonious with the power lines. But we all need power, and, you know, the energy companies have an obligation to make sure that we have the power, and they also have shareholders that have an interest in them being profitable. So I think if in a different world where they could spend as much money as they wanted to do this properly, there'd probably be other ways to manage it than what happens. But at current management level, certainly power line tree pruning is often destructive to the overall health of the tree.
Yeah, so there are other things we could plant, things that are shorter that would look better in that space. Now, I have a tree in my yard that I'm a little concerned about, and it's a silver maple. It's covered with lichen.
Ooh.
I know, right? From like the midpoint up. So I look at this tree and I'm like, is that a sign of it not being very healthy?
So lichen are not parasitic. They don't actually hurt the tree, but what they are a sign of, in particular in Cincinnati or greater Cincinnati area, is if they build up really thick, it means that you're not getting enough cell expansion on the tree itself. So if the tree's growing rapidly, you're going to have a lot less lichen buildup versus when the tree's a little bit of a slower grower or not doing as well. Mm-hmm. So it is something to look into, but not necessarily a problem.
Okay. And never like peel it off or spray anything, right? Now, if these were mushroom growths that are actually feeding on the inside of a plant material, this is not feeding, you know, and sucking away, right? So it's not hollow or, you know, it's not a pathogen, I should say. Oh. Yeah.
Well, we do have a caller on the line. Hey, Jill, thanks for calling. What did you want to talk about?
I'm in Indiana, in a little town where we had a severe flood last week. I have four sweet gum trees, the variety that is just a tall, thin tree. No real side branches. I can't remember the variety.
Slender silhouette.
Okay, there you go. And of the four, two are leaning maybe 10 degrees, and one is leaning quite badly. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to save those trees.
How tall are they?
They're about 6 years old, probably 20 feet tall.
So I think this is a scenario where you may be able to do some staking if you have room in your yard, and you could get maybe 2/3 of the way up from the base of the tree to the top if you could put some little screw eye or maybe a little piece of garden hose with some wire running through it, and you pull it back to a nice anchor in the ground, and you may be able to hold those back from falling over. And in addition to the guy wire, I would also recommend – if you could get on, and this is something that I'm not recommending you do and maybe a professional should do if you can't safely reach the top, but a little pruning of the top could take some of the weight off and pressure from pulling against it.
Okay. Is there hope even for the one that's leaning pretty badly? It's probably maybe 30 degrees leaning.
If you have enough, it's really hard to say without seeing it, but if you have enough tension that you can put on it, or if you can redig it and like dig up underneath it and physically turn it back to upright, it doesn't sound out of possibility to me.
Okay. Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much.
Sure thing. Good luck with that, Jill. We're
thank you.
Thinking of you. Mm-hmm. Well, we are talking about gardening today for the full hour, and we will be back with our gardening show after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with today's gardening show. My guests are Civic Garden Center Director of Education, Mary Dudley, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent, Sarah Imbus, and Madison Tree Care and Landscaping CEO, John Butcher. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org with your questions or comments. We had somebody who called earlier and didn't stay on the line. This was Sam. Sam has had two or three pines that have died in his yard quickly. Is there a pine disease that's going around? John, have you heard much about that?
So this has been going on forever, and I don't know exactly what this person has because I'm not looking at it, but white pines do not care for the clay alkaline soils of southwestern Ohio, and they're native to eastern Ohio where we've got sandstone base, well-drained, much more acidic soils, and they just get to a point where they don't like the soil. And for as many nice white pines as you've seen in Cincinnati, I don't plant them anymore because they're so unreliable. And it doesn't mean that they never work, but it's just not a reliable plant. And sometimes they'll get 20 years old and then they just go away, but we're sending samples away and there's not a pathogen associated with it most of the time. And so there's a term that people throw around called white pine decline, but really it's abiotic stress and not being planted in the right soil is what goes on most of the time with white pines.
So at a point they're just done.
Right. That's
yep.
right.
Yep. Well, Sarah, you were talking about plant selection before. I'm thinking of all the people out there who lost a big, beautiful tree in the mm-hmm. storm and they want to plant a new tree. In addition to plant selection, what should they keep in mind? I mean, you probably shouldn't plant right where that other one was. Is that right? Like, what do you need to keep in mind?
So a few things. It depends, right? And so are you getting that root structure fully removed, or are you just pruning it or having it removed at the base, at the soil line? So that makes a huge difference, right? What kind of plant was it? So many variables. I also recommend getting a soil test as well, not when the soil is very saturated. Let it dry out a little bit and drop that off to your local extension office, especially if you're in the Northern Kentucky area. Those are free samples. But also reaching out to local nurseries, having a certified arborist come out. I also can come out and take a look at your space too in Campbell County. But choosing the right plant for the right site, you know, so this just happened to a coworker. I'll use her as an example. Bradford pear came down. She immediately was like, sends me a picture because I needed to see the site. What are you looking for? Do you want something to flower? Do you want something to screen? Do you want an evergreen? Do you want to clean leaves up in the, you know, so what is it that you want? So come to find out, she wants a service berry and multi-trunk. And hey, keep in mind, it's going to have fruit on it. The birds are going to love it. Is it near a walkway? No. Okay. Do you mind the birds? Does your kids, and you know, you can harvest them. They're lovely. I sent her recipes of what
not
she...
Not the birds, right?
The berries. Oh, sorry. The berries. Yes, you can harvest the berries. And she's like, well, I'll make you muffins. And I'm like, perfect. So, you know, it's all these different things that come into play. You know, do you want something to create shade? Do you want something to provide an edible landscape? So that's what I then sent to her. Oh, you're creating an edible landscape. You know, what is it that you're wanting, right? I'm very guilty. I will go to a nursery and lollygag around and just look at plants, right? Sometimes that's not always great, right? If you have a specific site, take a picture. You're welcome to blow it up. When I used to work in the nursery, I loved when you would blow it up and then you could see the full picture. How close are you to your neighbor's house, right? What other structures? What other trees? What's around you? Where are your sidewalks, right? Are you going to lay down salt anywhere? Because that's also a thing, you know, all these things that we have to take into consideration. So I always say the easiest and the cheapest thing to do is to dig a hole, and plant a tree, right? The maintenance, the care is a very long time, and that can be expensive.
Yeah.
So,
but I also would encourage people to pause.
Yes.
You may have had a very shady landscape. And yes, I think the instant reaction might be, oh, well, I wanted to keep it the same. You know, I want this tree again. The best way to get a large tree is to plant a small one and yes. wait. And in the in-between time, or maybe just for a couple seasons, you can really enjoy that sun. So maybe you have more of a part or even a full sun area where you could put a raised bed over that root mass that's decaying. If it's not a black walnut, you'll have better luck. But as that decays, you're going to have more nutrients get freed up as those decomposers get to work. And so you can actually kind of use that to your advantage, and you could be growing, you know, strawberries in a place that you couldn't have before.
Okay. Well, we have some callers on the line. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Oh, I take care of dogs at a shelter, and they have a play area. It's paved, it's fenced in, and it's surrounded by neighbors' trees. And I've noticed over the last few weeks, there seems to be a lot of dead brown leaves on the pavement. And the pet coordinator pointed out to me that the pavement has been blackened by waste material from the spotted lanternfly, much like cicadas would. So, are we in for an early fall, or do you think this is the product of the spotted lanternfly? These premature brown dead leaves.
Is the area really sticky? Like is it like tacky? And do you feel like you're almost getting rained on with insect poop potentially? Because the spotted lanternfly would leave like honeydew, which is insect poop, which is really, really noticeable.
It smells
I think they've come and gone, I think.
So these dead leaves could be lots of things. It could just be a stressed tree at the end of the summer. It could be the fact that there's a broken branch up there that is hanging somewhere in the trees, and that broken branch is shedding the dead leaves. There could be a lot of reasons, but it sounds like if you've got dogs that you're watching, it may not be a bad idea to call an arborist and have them assess the trees over top of this to make sure there's nothing that's going to be really likely to hurt the dogs.
Yeah, then the trees belong to neighbors, though. They're not in the play. They're not in the play area.
Well, but you
but they're
can.
Hanging, they're hanging. They're overhanging.
Yeah, you can protect your own property. Why you can't do a laser beam cut and prune everything back to the property line? You do have a right to manage your airspace to some degree. You just can't destroy the integrity of the tree as a whole. But I really think it's worth looking at, and there are preventative things that you could do to help your scenario out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for calling, Jeff. Best of luck with that. We appreciate it. And now we have Todd on the line. Hi, Todd.
Hey, how are you guys? Great show. Thanks for all the information. So I planted a river birch in a hot, dry space in my first house. And then after that horrible experience, I then planted four more in my new house. They've done very well, but they are the messiest trees in the world, I think. I have leaves falling, branches falling, stuff falling all year round. Is there anything I could do? I've limbed them up somewhat and try to keep them a little more, like to get rid of some of the branches, but is there anything else I can do to make them less of a hassle all year?
I just want to add, maybe this is the answer to the previous caller, because river birches they litter, right? And so maybe they are prematurely defoliating defoliating, right? So I have seen that, and they are very tiny. You know, they leave messes, right? I don't know how else to say it. So maybe that, so maybe that's near the pet park or the pet
area.
That I didn't even think about that. Thanks, caller, by the way.
Yeah.
So,
okay. But what about poor Todd? Is there anything?
It's just, I mean, honestly, I think about it this way. You're saving money on not having someone come out and do a lot of pruning, because that tree self-prunes.
Yes.
And so, you know, you just need to find a neighborhood friend, you know, a kid. You can give them $20 and just keep raking. But
Mary said she's got a hose to tie up to the tree and a chainsaw.
No, no,
and she can pull it over for
you. No, Todd, stop. Don't listen to what John's saying right this minute. But now John's going to say something important.
Well, river birch actually are responding to stress by shedding leaves, and it's part of their defense mechanism. So when it gets really hot in the summer, they're making the bet that they'd rather have less leaves and lose less water through the foliage. So they're naturally going to shed more than other trees. This year has been really wet, and I can't imagine a site that the trees would be stressed in that way this year, but there is no river birch that's just not messier than the average tree. That's part of its MO.
Yeah. Can you, is limbing them up a good idea? Just like less, fewer limbs, fewer leaves, less stress? I don't know.
Yeah, on that on that philosophy, like less limbs equals less mess, no question. I think there's both an aesthetic balance and a health balance. And typically we want to stop at the one-third limb up, two-thirds canopy is typically the right ratio for things to look good and be healthy.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thanks
they
for calling.
They have lovely exfoliating bark.
Bark, right? Enjoy that bark. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, Todd. Thanks for listening. We appreciate your call. And now we have Brady on the line. Hi, Brady.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about a couple of Tree of Heaven trees that we've got in our back area, and they've attracted spotted lantern flies. And it looks like they dropped this awful tar stuff. And I only figured this out because I did a little bit of online research, but it's unclear to me whether I should chemically treat for the insects or take the trees down or just cut them back or if there's a better way to manage it.
Are these your only trees in your yard or are these just a couple of trees amongst many trees?
A couple amongst many.
I would be removing them if it were me is the preferred method in this case, but you could certainly chemically treat and control the spotted lantern fly on individual trees. But if you get rid of the ailanthus, they're less likely to be on the other trees in your yard. And they can feed on trees other than ailanthus. But
it's a tree of heaven.
We're calling it such a nice name. Yes. I think it's ghetto palm.
Is tree from Hades.
Yeah.
Various common names it has.
Yes. Okay.
But that substance is is fecal matter. So just be mindful.
If you want to take a shower under it, feel free.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. It's really gross.
It rains down out of the tree. It's like walking under it with clients talking about their trees. And it's like, can we stand over here and talk about this
really
particular tree?
It's unbelievable.
Don't park under it either.
Yeah. You might be doing those trees a favor. They can't enjoy that.
No. So remove and maybe replant something somewhere
native.
Else.
Native. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of the things, do we have time for me to go? One of the things about taking out an ailanthus is that they can reproliferate on the roots after you cut the stump down. And most of the time when you take it down a normal tree removal scenario and you cut the stump and you grind the stump out, you can control it. But sometimes by cutting down the ailanthus, you really excite the roots to try to maintain a living organism. And they shoot all these new shoots up all over your yard. And so one way to for sure prevent that is you hack into the base of the tree and you put a little bit of herbicide into that and you want to kill the tree ahead of time and then take it down so that it doesn't have that response to shoot up those root shoots everywhere.
So you don't get a zombie tree.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's not one, it's hundreds, thousands.
There's lovely seeds, right? There's the seed pod. It dangles and then they go everywhere.
Well, but these are coming from the roots, right?
Oh,
so this is
true.
This is a completely different thing.
Yes.
Well, what kind of herbicide would you suggest for that?
There's a forestry herbicide. I forget the name of it now. I could look it up really easily. It's not something that we use on a regular basis, but it's definitely available on the internet. If you just look up ailanthus and herbicide to pour into the trunk and it'll readily come up for you.
Yeah. Good luck,
awesome.
Brady. We're rooting
thanks
for
so
you.
Thanks for your help. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we have another caller on the line, but we need to take a quick break. So, Eric, please stay with us. We'll be back to wrap up our gardening show real soon. If you've got questions, now's the time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our gardening show with experts here to answer your questions. My guests are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Imbus, Madison Tree Care and Landscaping CEO John Butcher, and Civic Garden Center Director of Education Mary Dudley. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we have a number of callers on the line, so we might have to do kind of a lightning round with these. Hey, Eric, thanks so much for your patience. What's your question?
Hi. My question is about English ivy and whether I have a catalpa tree that I'm trying to remove the ivy from, and I've cut back all the visible exterior I don't know if to call it rootlets or whatever, their branches, and it's still growing above that area. And I just wondered, do they have secret roots that I'm not aware of? And I heard somebody a few minutes ago mentioned under bark roots, and I wondered if English ivy, is that nefarious?
I'm really confident that English ivy cannot grow from the tree. It has to be coming from the ground. So you just, and it can hide if there's like a really rough furrowed bark. There might be a branch that like grows underneath it, like it would a soffit in your house or something. But if you just go around the base and make a full circle and make sure there's separation. So you want like a 3-inch chunk that you take out of it. And it's not going to brown up right away either. There's stored energy in there. It may take a few weeks or a month to fully brown up. But if you cut it all the way, it will die. It's not parasitic.
Okay.
That's what I was concerned about. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Eric.
Can I say I appreciate the program, and I think Lucy has saved VXU from from an extinction event. So the show is totally enjoyable.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much, Eric. Thank you.
Alrighty.
Have a good one. And we have Tony on the line. Hi, Tony.
Hello. Hey, I have a question about pawpaw trees. A few years ago, we transplanted some pawpaws from the woods behind our house and put them in partial shade. We had to move two of them, and they're pretty much in full sun. But in the last 3 years, we had these two pawpaw trees in full sun that are just exploded. They've grown about 2.5, almost 3 feet this year, and they're doing real well in almost a full sun environment. And I was wondering, is a pawpaw tree something that I was thinking of planting them in the front yard because they look so nice. So the question is that a lark or a fluke that they're growing here well, or can you plant them in full sun and will they do well there too?
Take that one, Mary.
Yeah, I've got a pawpaw in full sun in my front yard, and it is beautiful. It has this amazing pyramidal shape to it. I did have two leaders on it, and one of them did snap a few years ago in one of our storms, but the other one is doing very well. It's producing a bunch of fruit. I just picked 12 off this morning, which was wonderful, that fell on the ground. So yes, I think that this is a scenario where they will grow in partial shade environments, but they can thrive in full sun. Just making sure you're keeping those roots satisfied and you're putting it in the right place. They will get fairly tall. The one in my front yard is over 30 feet. So paying attention to those power lines, like we mentioned, but yeah, they can do very well.
In our sister land-grant university, Kentucky State University is the international researchers of pawpaws. So check out their website. And just, you know, when you harvest from the forest floors, most likely genetically they're all the same. So if you want your pawpaw to flower and fruit, you need genetically different pawpaws. So similar to that of like apples, for example. So most likely, they're all genetically the same. So in the forest floor, you're like, well, where are all the fruit? Most likely, they're not going to fruit. Sometimes they do, mm-hmm. Because there might be another genetic pawpaw patch nearby.
Okay. Well, thanks, Tony.
If you're saying I should grab it, if I want them to fruit, I should get a pawpaw tree from somewhere else, not the woods behind our house. Something completely different.
Yes. So there are nurseries that have genetic, cultivars, if you will. Again, within the own forest, it might have various genetics, but there's no way to test that unless you can visually see them flower. They pollinate by flies, or you can pollinate themselves by, with a paintbrush or something. You can pollinate them, but the flower dangles down and like bees don't pollinate them, for example.
Okay. Well, best of luck with those pawpaws, Tony.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. And we have Riley on the phone. Hi, Riley.
Hi. I have an oak tree in my yard that's on the smaller side that appears to have spots on the leaves that just appeared over the last few weeks. And I'm wondering if it's oak wilt. And if it is, how do I treat it?
John, you want to jump on that one?
I think it's really unlikely that it's oak wilt, but the only way to tell is to test. And if you want to send it to your local extension office to have it tested, if you call the extension office, they'll tell you what you need to send a good test sample in for them to determine that. But the symptoms you're describing, if the tree looks relatively healthy and there's just spots on the leaves, I think it's really unlikely. We're probably looking at a foliar fungus, might be Tabakia. There's other foliar fungi. It's really late in the season. The leaves have done most of their work. There's no treatment you're going to do at this point. I would really recommend just waiting it out, seeing what they look like when they come out next spring. And if this ends up being a perennial problem, it might be something you want to treat for. And in the meanwhile, it can't hurt to follow up with your extension office and do a test.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure thing. Thanks for calling, Riley. And we have Ramesh on the line. Hey there, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hello, you talking to me?
Yes. Sorry, can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, I can hear you. Thank you for taking my call. This is the first time that I've actually listened to the show, and I thought I'd ask a question. I live in a suburban area here, and my yard is just a big mess. And also, I've got a very narrow backyard and a ravine behind that. So it's only about 12 feet or so wide. And the trees that grow on the edge there, they just have so much foliage that there is hardly any sun that coming to that backyard. And therefore, I can't grow any grass or anything on that 12-foot broad section. My question is this. Is it okay to prune those trees and take the branches off so that I get some sunlight there? I would like to do that as soon as possible. The guy who was going to do it said I can come in a couple of weeks. Would it be okay to do that at this time, thinking it's summer and all that?
I would just make sure that you also check your municipality. I've been calling a lot of municipalities and looking up a lot of city ordinances recently, making sure that you don't need a permit to do anything like that. There are a few places around that actually want to have you get that checked out. But otherwise, I think pruning this time of year.
Well, pruning means a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And if you mean indiscriminately hacking off limbs back to your property line, I think that would be ill-advised for the health of the plants. I don't know if they're trees that are owned by you or if they're your neighbor's trees, but I think this is something where a credible professional arborist would be the best thing to advise you as to what's acceptable for these trees or not.
Would an arborist know what the municipal rules are too, John?
A local arborist that's working in that community regularly should know if they need permits or not to do anything like that.
But let me interject here. The trees are on my property. Mm. It's in the backyard that stretches down to a little creek and then goes back up on the other side of that little ravine. So I don't want the trees to be cut down because then I'm going to have erosion and landslide. I don't want that. I just want to take some of the branches off so that I get sun in the backyard. That's what I was proposing.
So I do believe there's a responsible level and a way to do that, but it's not me just giving you a carte blanche sure. prune as much as you want.
Yeah.
That could be really destructive. But there is pruning that can be done that can allow more light to the yard temporarily, which will take ongoing maintenance to maintain. Yeah.
There are also other things you can grow besides lawn. So if you are wanting to do some things, there's agroforestry you can look at. There's shady ground covers that you can look at too. So sometimes it is really frustrating. You can't grow that lawn without that full sun. There's options.
Native grasses, sedges that do well in the shade, or create a shade garden. Because mowing, maintenance of that space may not be safe and or, you know, helpful.
Easy. Yeah.
Well, I think Mary and Sarah are giving you great advice, because often when we're doing a little bit of pruning to make room for grass, it just doesn't turn out well for the grass. And you put all this effort in and the grass still looks pretty poor at the end of the day. Yeah. So I'm not saying there's no option for it, but I think the ladies have good advice for you.
Yeah.
I would love to put anything that grows. I mean, just ivy would be fine too if I could find something that's just some ground cover.
Yeah.
Just some ground cover is what I'm looking for.
Lovely. Yeah.
So there would be ground cover that I can get that can do well in the shade.
Yeah, wild ginger. I would look at some wild ginger that has had a really nice, beautiful leaf and good texture to it. Yeah.
Send us an email. I wouldn't mind an email with a picture of this space, and I'm happy to then, you know, send you like five or so recommendations, and then go about your merry way and maybe and then go to your nurseries.
Yeah, we are running out of time, Ramesh. Thanks so much for your call. I really appreciate that, and I hope that helps. We had one really quick email. I hope we can get. Jennifer writes, I have cosmos that I planted from seed in May that just won't bloom. They just get taller and taller with more foliage, but don't seem to bloom. They're about 6 feet tall now. The package said 3 to 4 feet. They're in full sun. Is this a case of too much nitrogen and not enough phosphorus? Any ideas?
So the first thing I thought of, well, do you have little critters, you know, deer, rabbits, things, when it wasn't 6 feet tall, of course. So do you have any flower buds? You should start seeing flower buds now if you planted those seed in May. The second thing is really cosmos don't need nitrogen, any fertilizer in our native soil. They do fairly well in our slightly alkaline soil. And we typically have enough phosphorus and potassium in our native soil. So I don't really know. Don't add more nitrogen or an all-purpose fertilizer. I would let you, yeah.
Okay. Well, this has gone so fast this time. I've been talking with Madison Tree Care and Landscaping CEO John Butcher, Civic Garden Center Director of Education Mary Dudley, and Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Imbus. Thank you all so much for your time today.
So fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.